The O'Leary Review Podcast, Episode 19. The O'Leary Review Podcast, bringing you conversations that matter. Get ready for serious content amidst an oftentimes unserious culture. All right, welcome back to the O'Leary Review Podcast. Today we have Rafe Juarez with us on the program, and we'll get to Rafe's whole career and stuff, but I'm just going to read a quick bio for you. Rafe has spent years at every level of the sales cycle. Specializing in tech startups, Rafe is engaged with executives in Fortune 500 companies, to athletic directors at major universities, to major league sports. In addition to his expertise in prospecting, Rafe is an experienced sales coach and trainer, specializing in cold call script creation and one-on-one coaching. He's held positions as head of sales, sales development director, and channel manager. Rafe is a graduate of Michigan State University and has his Sandler Sales Training Certification. So, Rafe, welcome to the program. Finally, glad to have you on here.
Thank you, Brian. Glad to be here. Appreciate it.
Yeah, and I mentioned in the bio here that you are, I mean, essentially it screams sales. So why don't you describe what your job description is for the folks out there, and then we can get into that. And a quick, you know, I don't know, couple sentence thing, and then
So I'm officially, I guess, I'm the CEO founder of this company, On Demand Pipeline. But I mean, my everyday work is as a is prospecting, is sales development for my clients. So what I do is just go out to the market on behalf of them and book meetings for them, reach out to people that they really want to talk to and potentially do business with.
Mm-hmm. So your clients are other businesses. So let me get this. We've talked about in the past, and I've seen a couple of your seminars. And what you do, I believe, is your client asks you or contracts you to get sales meetings with other businesses, and you're essentially the conduit that is the expert in the field at getting meetings with other folks.
That's right. That's right. So the industries that I mostly focus on are software and technology.
Okay.
And what they sell, whether it's a product or a service, there's a spectrum from what you had mentioned earlier, you know, a product related to sports improvement for athletes, okay, to safety for environmental health and safety people,
okay,
with regard to an app for that, for instance. But it's all in this world of software and technology and delivering those services through that. And so in this world, for the last probably 10 years, maybe almost 15, of the software world, there's been a growing branch of sales, and it continues to grow. Sales development, mm-hmm, or business development,
right?
And they hire typically junior level people, maybe no experience in sales, maybe a couple years out of university with some sales experience, but it's a great opportunity for younger people to get into sales and begin that journey through their career. And it's all about reaching out to clients, potential clients, prospects,
right,
whether it's through phone, email, LinkedIn, and doing all these touch points, if you will. And so my focus is to work with smaller companies, startups, maybe less than 50 employees, who maybe have a sales manager, maybe one account executive, and who's doing the full sales prospecting. And what I mean by that is,
these are the folks that are hiring you to do their reach out, right? Okay.
Yeah, the owners, the CEOs, yes, and owners, and maybe the VPs of sales are hiring me, mm-hmm, typically on a short-term basis to fill that gap,
right,
as they build their own internal team.
Okay, got it.
And so what I'll do is come in and anywhere from three months to 12 months to 18 months, whatever the makes sense for the engagement, is to book those meetings fairly quickly. And right, the value that I'm bringing to the table is that if they are going to build their own internal team, And it makes sense if they're going to grow the business to do that and have it internally and have W-2 employees. It's going to take time to find the right people. Mm-hmm. It's going to, you as either the sales manager or as the founder, CEO, who still has his or her fingers in sales, it's going to take time to recruit those people, interview those people, hire them, onboard them, train them, coach them, mm-hmm. get them to full productivity of the metrics where they need to be for sales. And that can be anywhere from 4 to 6 months. And so what I do is I come in during that gap, and within a couple of weeks, I can start booking meetings on behalf of the client while they in parallel are still going down that path mm-hmm. and building that team up. And so when that person or that team is up to full productivity, I go to the off ramp, and I can either stay on or I find more clients.
Yeah. And so I want to get to eventually like how you got into this role, because I think it's a very neat little niche part of the whole sales umbrella, whatever you might want to call it. But you started mm-hmm. your career essentially in the automotive industry, because I don't know if I mentioned from the top, I mentioned that you're a graduate of Michigan State, but you live in Michigan. I mean, it's historically, the home of the auto industry in the United States. So you were in the auto industry and on the sales part, correct? On the sales end, is that right?
No, not at all. I was on the opposite side of the table.
Oh,
ironically, I was in purchasing.
Purchasing, and then you shifted to the software. Okay.
Yeah, and then I shifted over to the other side of the table, sales. So you want me to go into that story?
You bet. Yeah. So it's you started out in purchasing for, is it raw products or? Why don't you take it away? I'm interested. I got a little screwed up from when we talked last. So
that's okay. Yeah. No worries. So I'll just brief note about Michigan State. I got a degree at the time it was called Materials and Logistics Management. Now it's called Supply Chain Management.
Okay. Yeah.
And there was a subset category, and one of them was purchasing. And so I graduated with a degree of purchasing. And so I graduated and worked for a tier one supplier mm-hmm. in the Detroit area mm-hmm. for about 4 to 5 years as a purchaser, a junior level purchaser. And then went to work at one of the OEMs after that mm-hmm. and spent about 10 years there and in purchasing. And so it was a great opportunity to really learn business at a much larger scale, at a global scale as well. And it was a great opportunity to learn skills that I hadn't had before. In fact, as I was preparing for this discussion, I was looking back to some of the training courses I had taken through that company. And one of them was negotiation training with salespeople, obviously, right? Uh-huh. Buyers and sellers. And that was one of the, if I were to think about one of the few things that made an impact, a financial impact on me positively or even for the company, that was one of them, was that sales training or mm-hmm. the negotiation training. Anyway, so I'd stayed there for until about 2005. I wanted to go out and branch out on my own, and did that with a partner of mine. And unfortunately, it didn't go very well for two reasons. I didn't know what I was doing. I thought it'd be a fairly simple transition
to entrepreneurship.
Yeah, I mean, I had been thinking about it, reading about entrepreneurship for about 5 years before making the transition. A lot of Robert Kiyosaki mm-hmm. and some other books as well, and I didn't think it would be as difficult as it was. Mm-hmm. And so it was mostly about a mindset change. And when I did it, I didn't do very well. And so, but what I learned from that experience is that I really wanted to stay in sales. And for me, that was one of the paths to getting to financial freedom, ultimately to financial freedom. And it was either going to be an owner of a business, but I had no idea what I would start or if I wanted to buy a franchise. Mm-hmm. And then one of the other ideas is, okay, we'll get into sales. And that's one way you could earn good money as well, based on what you put into it as well. And so I broke into software sales. So I was probably 38 years old at the time. Okay. So this is a mid-career change.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was lucky enough to get a job here in the Ann Arbor area with a software company and start there. And they took a chance on me, and we did pretty well. And then over the years, this is as an individual contributor. So in the sales world, you do everything.
Right.
you prospect, you have those first meetings, you move these opportunities down the sales funnel, if you're familiar with that, and then you close the deal. So you're responsible for the whole sales cycle. And so I was an individual contributor for a few companies and here in town. And then my last company I was at was, I was the head of sales for that organization, a true startup in the AI space.
Oh,
and it was it was in 2019. I started September 2019, I think it was. And as we all know, what happened in March of 2020.
Yeah, sure we do.
Pandemic, lockdown, and multiple people getting laid off. So I was one of those people. And I was out for a few months, out of work for a few months, for about 9 months. And so what I found after that is I worked for as a contractor for a friend of mine who's in a similar type of company that I am, that I run now.
Okay.
He does a little more services and more technology sales of technology as well.
And you're primarily software or exclusively software right now?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, I shouldn't say exclusively. My clients.
Your clients.
My clients.
So you have a specialty and a
but
niche.
For the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. It's anyway. The niche, right? Yeah.
So you're working with your friend.
Yeah. So I worked for him as a contractor for a few months. And then, and during that time, I was applying for jobs. And what I realized, and of course, in the software industry, especially if they're high ticket items, most companies are not going to just hire you immediately or buy your product immediately because it could be $50,000, $60,000, $100,000. They're not ready to do that yet. So you're going to do a pilot,
you're going to
do a pilot that could be a month, 2 months, 3 months, whatever it may be.
Explain pilot a little bit for the folks.
Yeah, so basically it's typically a paid pilot is you, the client, and you agree that, okay, we're going to, let's work on a particular project using our service or our product, and we're going to test it out and see what the result is.
Just on a lower price point, lower scale,
at a lower price point
when you get the full functionality out of the whole thing.
Typically it's 10% of the full value of the product. So that way they have some skin in the game and they're going
to
help.
And it's not too much if they have to bail or they need to bail or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Got
That's
it.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, they are investing their people's time in it. And which is expensive, but that's the whole point, is to get them involved to make sure that they do what they committed to do when they agree to this pilot. And of course, we're going to do what we need to do. And so I took that mentality into my job search because in some cases, you don't know what you're going to get into as an employee until you get into a new company, and you may not have fully understood what you're getting yourself into for one reason or another. And so I took that mindset into the interview process, and I said, "Well, why don't we do this? Let's do a 3 month pilot. You pay me, X thousands of dollars per month, and we'll see if we're a good fit." I'll see if this is the right fit for me. You'll see if I'm a good fit for you.
Right.
And just by coincidence, so I that's what happened with one particular company. Came on as a contractor, and we agreed to this pilot. Let's see how it goes for 3 months.
Okay.
And then coincidentally, I got a referral from one of my previous coworkers who was a freelancer like myself at the time. And she said, "Hey, I have a client who needs help with his pipeline, and he's looking to hire a salesman." So I had the same exact conversation with him, saying, "Well, why don't we do this? You need help with top of funnel." And in the sales world, you've got the funnel, right? And you got to constantly fill it up because it's narrowing down and only a few deals are going to close out of that.
So you
constantly have to refill that. And so he hired me on as a contractor as well, very specifically as a sales development rep. That's the type of work that I do. And so I had these two contracts going at the same time, and it hit me like a ton of bricks that I was making more money in those few months than I ever was as an employee on a monthly basis.
Right. And you still had the bandwidth.
I still had the bandwidth.
Yeah.
And the other thing too is I certainly reduced my risk as an employee, because it was, as we know now, every day we know anybody can get laid off at any time. So I was spreading my risk at that point between two companies, and then I got a third, and a fourth, and it just great. And over time, yeah. I realized
and that's the model.
Actually, I kept on. That was the model. But the interesting thing, Brian, is I kept on. Initially, I was telling myself this is just an experiment to see if this works.
How long did that last?
Well, I kept on telling my wife that too. It's an experiment, but the money was good, and yeah. it was very good. And but there was a mindset that I still had was, am I good enough? There's that right. That imposter syndrome.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second, because you mentioned that you had a mindset change when you wanted to be just become an entrepreneur in general, get into the sales thing in general. And then you have to have another mindset change. It's not a total shift, right, from what I'm understanding it, but it's a total, you're dealing with, you know, different problems. And you mentioned kind of the imposter syndrome, which I think a lot of us have, like we know that we're I've heard it said, it's like a, I don't know if you're familiar with the Dunning-Kruger effect, where people think they're essentially what it amounts to is people think they're better at something than they are. The imposter syndrome is almost the opposite of that, where you're better at something than you believe you are. So
That's right. And it's such a, that is one of the things that I think holds everyone back is we have that limited belief about ourselves.
So how did you climb, how did you break through that barrier, or have you yet?
No, it's, I think I have. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting, and I had people, like, for instance, my friend who I worked as a contractor, when he would introduce me to some of his clients or other people, and he would say, and he actually said it to me privately a few times. You're like, mm-hmm. you're one of the best cold callers I know. Mm-hmm. And I thought and I kept on telling him, you're pulling my leg, right? Because he's built sales teams across, you know, larger organizations. And so right. I thought he was just pulling my leg.
Well, I have to say, Rafe, I've having heard some of your phone calls, and, you know, we're not going to release them here, but I have heard some of your sample phone calls.
Sure.
And it's not what I hear or see on TV that a cold call might be. You're having a conversation. You're trying to build a relationship with the person in however short of time. I think you say 5 to 7 seconds, you got to get that relationship built. And it's not, you're not coming on strong, but you're not coming on weak. You're dealing with the person on their level and your own level. You're not, what's happening, I think the key maybe in sales calls and stuff like that is we're not trying to be somebody we're not. You know, I was doing some sales training the other day, reading an old sales training book, and he mentioned this the story.
What was the book?
Oh, it is, I got it right in front of me. How to Sell Yourself to Others by Elmer Wheeler from 1947. Okay. So I talk old. Yeah, it's old. And it has my grandfather's writing and notes in it. But anyway, he says in here that if you're, let's see, I wasn't prepared to talk about it, but so he talks about how people who like dogs, for instance, or cats or canaries or whatever, you mm-hmm. know, if they like dogs, if they pretend to like dogs just to get along in a social situation, the dog will probably mm-hmm. bite them, you know, or something like that. You know, the point being is that if you're friendly with dogs and just naturally friendly with dogs, you can get along with dogs and you don't have to fake it. If you're naturally good or train yourself to enjoy calling people or doing some other form of sales, you can do it. But if you come off as fake, I guess is what I'm getting at, you're never, mm-hmm. it's never going to work, or it's only going to work, and you're going to make more enemies than you are friends in this thing. And, yeah. and the whole thing is like probably, you ultimately get a lot of enemies in cold calling, but you know,
I wouldn't say enemies, but it's, I mean, because it's a very short transactional interaction.
Yeah.
But
and,
you know,
and really
you,
not where you, you're at, because you're business to business as opposed to business to consumer, which
that's right.
You do get a lot of enemies. That's kind of my framework. Anyway, continue on.
Yeah, yeah. But you sparked a thought or a memory here with regard to when we talked about the imposter syndrome and how do you get over that? Mm-hmm. Right? You said you listened to a few calls of mine and mm-hmm. and you as you described earlier. It took years,
I'm sure,
of both training, official, formal sales training, and okay, now that I learned something in the classroom for a couple of hours, I got to execute it. Mm-hmm. And so I took about 6 years of sales training on a weekly basis, and it was consistent. It was very rare that I would miss a week. It was every Monday from 10 until 12 in the morning.
Okay.
And it was always focused on one particular topic. So we would, the instructors, and it was Sandler sales training, and I put my own money into it, mm-hmm. A low five-figure investment. But it was well worth it. And so we would train a particular topic, role play with other class members who were adults, right? This is not children.
And this
or,
is,
you know,
this is in-person stuff as opposed to now Zoom, Zoom-ish stuff.
That's right. That's right. It was in person at the time.
Yeah.
That's right. And now it's a lot of it. It's on Zoom. And so, but the combination of 6 years of sales training and then implementing what I learned on that Monday through the rest of the week, just constantly reinforced that training. And then, of course, having to do my own prospecting, mm-hmm. I just got better, more comfortable at it.
Sure.
And when you get more comfortable at it, and you're following a structure, a pre-designed structure, you just get better at it. And and then eventually you start doing it unconscious. The unconscious competence? Is that what it is?
I think. I think you've mentioned, I've heard you mention before where, compare it to like somebody in the military, if they, get knocked out or lose consciousness and they just kind of end up falling back on the training that's like built into their mind or whatever. And it's a second nature essentially, right?
That's right. If you get into a situation on a cold call where somebody says something that you weren't expecting. Mm-hmm. And so what do you do? And the first thing is engage with that person on what they said, mm-hmm. all right? Or what they asked, and go with the conversation. But then as that's flowing between you and the prospect, you're thinking about, okay, I need to drive this conversation to this particular point. Ultimately, I want to get a meeting. Mm-hmm. But before I get to that meeting, I got to cross their bridges mm-hmm. because I haven't built any trust yet.
Right.
And so that's when what you just mentioned, we fall back on that training. And when we're not sure about something, silence of a second or two is actually okay. We're so, we all know that as a culture, we don't like silence in conversation because it feels awkward. Yeah. A second or 2 seconds feels like, 30 seconds, and it doesn't. It's natural.
Uh-huh.
So falling back on that training, and so that's how I was able to get to the point where I am today, just comfortable in doing it.
Yeah, and
at a large scale.
Okay.
For many different companies where I use a structure for my template for the scripts. So I plug in the value statements, the challenges that they may have, but I'm using that structure, and so I can use that across different types of companies.
Right. And so you mentioned your training courses. Like I just want to drill down on this. Because I think we're in a culture today, I often talk about the culture on this show and others, where, my contention is we're not a particularly serious culture, but people like you are making it much more serious. Hopefully myself, I don't know. But you talked about sales training courses. And I think in this culture that we're in now, we want the hack. We want to do it. We want everything to just like pop up and, quick. I'm a salesman because I have this script in front of me, or I have these words in front of me. But in reality, it took you, at least 6 years in this one particular realm or genre of sales, and then a whole career of training. And you mentioned an earlier training, trying to get into the entrepreneur sales side of everything. So you got a ton of sales training behind you, and you say five figures, and people like, that when you said that, I'm like, whoa, five figures. But if it's 10 grand, if that nets you out, in total sales volume, $1 million, which is probably pretty easy in this world because of the money you're already talking about, not necessarily that your income immediately, but that's huge. That's a huge benefit, right? Huge.
Oh, yeah. Education is, especially this type of sales training. Some people, their employer will pay for them to go to these sessions mm-hmm. and they don't participate.
Well, because it's free. They don't have skin in the game.
You're right. They don't have skin in the game. And I would say it's only a handful of people. Most of the people that are sent there, yeah. I mean, they need to improve.
Right.
In fact, they're expected to improve. And there are a few people, a handful of people like myself, who also put their own money in to make it happen. And I think you're right. There are a lot of people who want to hack their way through sales and want to be promoted immediately from a sales development rep who just started 6 months ago. Now I want to be an account executive. And if depending on what you're selling and who you're talking to in the account executive, there's just the experience isn't there and the success isn't there yet. And so you're right. There's that love, that mindset that the education is not that important. And I've just learned, and my clients learned, that you've got to go through the steps. And so from a training, sales training and coaching perspective for my business, I do focus mostly on junior level people who are doing what I'm doing and just need help, need structure, and need that confidence in order to execute what needs to be done, and how to have those, what they call equal business stature discussions, equal business stature. So if you're talking to a president or a VP of a, I don't know, a $50 million company, we may have, again, that imposter syndrome may set in, and you're saying, I'm just a lowly salesperson and I'm talking to the president of this company. And that's where we have to have that mindset change. But how do you do that? Some of it we learned through reading, right?
Right.
Through reading the right books, like that sales book you talked about earlier, and many sales books I've read through and kind of go back to as well. But that training has to be done. And how we do that is one-on-one, typically one-on-one, and walking. And before we do anything, we
that's
do an assessment.
That's the best, the one-on-one, sit at the knee of the master and learn.
Yeah. And so, but it's interesting, Brian, is because sometimes the student, when I'm critiquing, they may not necessarily believe what I'm saying, because for some reason they have that that resistance to it, that, well, you're not, you don't really understand what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
So what we do before we start the training is we do a sales training assessment by a group out on the East Coast. I can't remember the name of it right now. And it's an exceptional, very specific to sales skills.
Yeah. And I've heard you say it's not biased in the way that of.
No.
Yeah. I want to explain that a little bit.
Yeah. So it's not biased. It spits out a report that says Rafe is strong in these categories, let's say prospecting or asking difficult questions. But once we get further down the funnel, he may have a challenge with keeping the deal alive, especially if it's like a long sales cycle.
And that's based on the answers to this assessment. Got it.
That's right.
Not necessarily a career of what, but it's like,
how you're engaging or what your mindset is in dealing with situations.
Yeah.
And so when I have a client with whom I'm training, we'll do that first. And then, of course, I share that with them and say, well, this is, let's spend some time. Let's spend an hour or two walking through this assessment. And this is what you tell me what you see, where you're strong and where you think you need to improve. And I'll do the same thing. And let's see if we're aligned. And typically, I mean, if they're being very honest with themselves, they'll see it right there. This is a computer that's telling you you're good here and you're not so good here. And so let's focus on the areas where you need help. And then now we've taken out that internal resistance on the client side to say that maybe, you know, Ray's telling me I'm not that strong in this portion of the sales prospecting piece, but I think I am. Kind of like what you talked about earlier, and now we can focus on that and actually get things done.
Yeah. Well, so yeah, I would just say, you know, you don't need to, you know, dive into every single training program that's offered to you. Right. That's the kind of the hard part. So you see this price, the price point, which is like, oh, like my goodness, like this is a price point. I can't afford that. But in reality, we talked about you probably can. It's just like how you're going to use it. But on the other hand, like if you're a sales or a training or product junkie, essentially, you're going to get nothing out of it either, because the same thing, you're buying all these things trying to get the next fix or hack. And you're like, no, that doesn't work. And meanwhile, you stack up all these things. That's why I mentioned I got all these books behind me, and I kind of had this mindset shift, like you were talking about. I'm like, I enjoy reading the books, but I enjoy biographies and whatnot. But I enjoy just like, oh, this is a pleasant thing to learn about people. But no, my mindset shift really like a couple weeks ago was like, no, I'm gonna use what I learn and then teach people those lessons from what I learn. That is the key, and not that I haven't already, but this is a conscious shift in the mindset. So I would say, or I'd ask you, as far as sales training goes, what's your approach to what do you tell people about sales training and what they need and how much and so forth? Because obviously there's only so much time in the day or week or whatever.
Sure. And so I think it's starting with that assessment. And but then as we go through role plays, and that's extremely important as well, is helping that person. Let me back up a second. Mm-hmm. So you're going to sell something. What you're selling is the meeting.
Mm-hmm.
You're selling the meeting. You're not selling the product at this point right now. And because I'm working with mostly these SDRs, these sales development reps, that's what they're doing.
Okay.
Trying to book that meeting. And so we got to focus on, okay, what are we going to say in those first few seconds that is short? We're not going to be talking, babbling too long. Mm. It's short. It's to the point. And
I need to take
meaningful.
Your training.
Pardon me?
I need to.
You need to take the training, right? Yeah. And so we work out that script, number one, and then we start going through some role plays. And if they have any of their calls, real calls recorded prior to us working with each other, we listen to those. Mm. I listen to those offhand beforehand as well. I should say offline beforehand.
Sure.
And then get a sense for what they sound like, how they're delivering the messaging. And then we'll walk through role play. And depending on where we are in the engagement with my client, mm-hmm. like if we're just starting, I'm going to interrupt a lot an instructor. It's
sure.
like, okay, let's walk through that. What is the mindset? And then we kind of go back to the mindset of why did you say it like that? Why did you deliver that message in a tone that sounded obsequious, right? Mm-hmm. As an example, not equal business stature. And then we start digging into, and this is a fine line. You don't want to be their psychiatrist, psychologist, but some of the head trash that we have as salespeople seeps into our conversations. And that's why we don't ask what we perceive as difficult questions, and they may not be from the prospect side.
That's coaching, you know. And I come at it from an athletics background, where a good coach, he's not going to sit down and have, like you say, a psychologist session with you one on one, but he's going to, you know, hit you with the tip here or tip there, or have you already had the training so that what you say with this one little thing will really trigger something in your brain to help you out, or hopefully. And then a good coach will just constantly mm-hmm. keep at it, you know, and you know, if you're doing something great, great. If you're not doing something great, criticize that and move on and figure out a fix.
Yeah. And you talked about sports with regard to game film.
Mm.
And that's how we all know, that's how players get better, by looking at, mm-hmm. at their own
sure. yeah.
behavior on the field. And that's one of the ways to get better, is to listen to yourself in a phone call.
Uh-huh.
It can be painful. And I can personally attest to that.
Try podcasting. Yeah, that can be painful too.
There you go. You hear your voice. And the first time I heard my voice, I just thought, do I really sound like that? And I had to just eventually accept that. That's my voice. That's who
I
am.
From what I've heard in like the whole audio, people like, hearing their own voice. Eventually, I think almost 100% of people think like, what? I sound like, that is crazy. And then the more you hear yourself on tape or whatever you might call it now these days, it's almost like, that is me. I know my voice, just like I know, you know, Jim Rohn's voice or something like that, you know?
That's right.
Yeah.
And once we hear, in the game film analogy, once we hear our conversations, and as an, you know, an example is the filler, mm-hmm. saying a lot, or you know,
right.
in between statements that we're making or questions that we're asking, they can convey a sense of lack of confidence from the prospect side. And it's also, it can be somewhat annoying. I mean, I listened to one of my calls one time, and I think I count, and my purpose in listening to the call is to listen to count how many ums I said. And I ended up with like 50 or 60, and I couldn't believe it. I was embarrassed. And I think I had to stop at some point because I couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah.
But the game film, listening to one's calls and understanding, okay, when that prospect asked me that question or was silent after I asked a question, and then I couldn't take the silence anymore, so I said something else, and I said, you know what? We can reduce the price.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But But how do I know what that prospect was thinking? Maybe the prospect was just taking the moment to sit back and think about, okay, they just told me a price. Is that in my budget? Maybe I don't even know what my budget is. I got to talk to somebody about it. But I, as a salesperson, all of a sudden, because I'm getting so nervous of, of silence, I'm saying, well, you know what? I'll give it to you free. As a paid pilot, you know, rather than a paid pilot, let's do it free.
Right.
And I've actually been in the room too,
you know, like, and then you feel like, oh, did I do the right thing? I think I might have, but ultimately you're like, oh, that was a real mistake, but you learn from it, I guess.
Yeah. And it gets back to a lot of different things, such as equal business stature. I don't have equal business stature. I didn't wait for that silence because I didn't feel like I was feeling, I felt like I was sitting in the little chair, they're sitting in the big chair. And that's what we do in the training and the coaching, is walking through scenarios like that, where I'll be an easy prospect for my student, and we'll walk through a scenario. Then we'll go through a medium challenging prospect, and then go through the hard-nosed, you know, I'm going to challenge you with these crazy questions, maybe even throw, you know, some, unfortunately, some profanity at you to see how you respond. Because, you know, it rarely happens, but it does happen. Yeah. And so when it does, you just want to be prepared for it.
Yeah. And I heard you mention that you're at the point now that where you had this happen to you a couple of weeks ago, where somebody MF'd you all up and down, and you said it just kind of rolled like water off a duck's back or something like that. And because you've been through it so many times, and that's essentially, you know, again, I referenced that I come from athletics background and I huge sports fan, and like, that's Joe Burrow in the pocket, you know?
Yeah.
You know, or pick your QB, Tom Brady or whatever.
That's right. But to that point, to that example right there, Brian, this is where our jobs, no matter what we do, we cannot compartmentalize our role as salesperson versus role as father, husband, brother, Christian, Muslim, whatever it may be. Because in that particular case, yes, the water did roll off my back, but I truly, sincerely felt sorry for the guy because he was so angry. And he hung up after a profanity-laced diatribe and telling me I'm a loser. and so when he hung up, I literally, in my mind, I just said, I got to pray for this guy.
Yeah.
And for me, I prayed for him, and that was it. And he was disqualified, and I moved on. But someone doesn't react that way on the phone because they're getting a cold call. There are deeper issues there. So
yeah, interesting.
So hopefully he's doing better.
Yeah. And so that brings up two things. I'll talk about one real quick question that came up. I didn't really have, you mentioned that you want to kind of put yourself in that guy's headspace. And this is, as far as I understand, the concept of empathy. Would you agree that you're trying to be empathetic with that man? I've heard it said that empathy doesn't exist in real life, but it might be a good theory. But I kind of believe that it does, because when you're trying to put yourself in the other person's headspace or whatever it might be, there's also personal development and interpersonal development there. Whether you ever achieve true empathy is, I think, beside the point. I don't know if you would agree with that point or how it relates to your sales career.
Yeah, I think in the space that I'm in right now, this top of funnel where the conversations are fairly short, it's all about just being a human being.
Right.
We're not, when so, I yeah, train I guess, through.
Okay, yeah.
So, go ahead. What were we going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, so once you get to this point where the guy's yelling and screaming at you, it's just it's a personal thing. That would have nothing to do with sales, because that's sales. You're never going to get that sale, right?
Yeah, chalk
it up to like, it's a lost cause.
It's not about me. It's not, he doesn't even know me. He didn't even hear my name.
Yeah.
He didn't even hear my company. He's so deeply in whatever he's in working on, because I'm an interruption.
Yes.
When I call somebody, I am the problem at that moment. I am the problem.
And the interruption, I'm holding up my iPhone. It's like, you know, you have it down, but the interruption is the buzz in your pocket or the ding or whatever. And then you're like, look at it. And then that's essentially what you are. Because I don't know if we're trained, it might be instinctual as human beings to at least respond to the interruption. And then how you get the response is your job, right? Essentially what it amounts to, right?
Yeah, I can't. Yeah, this is, I think we all know this as human beings, but also this is just very specific in sales is I can't control how the prospect acts. All I can do is control my own behavior.
Yeah, and that's sports too. That's a lesson from sports big time.
That's right. And so, when you get somebody who says, when they pick up the phone and say, I say, hi, this is Rafe Juarez with On Demand Pipeline. Did I catch you at a bad time? And then they say, yeah, I'm actually at a funeral right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you say, oh, I'm so sorry. I'll let you go. I'll call you back at a later time.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, why would you want to say, oh, well, is it someone close? Because if it's not, maybe I can still get a book a meeting with you.
Right? Yeah, the meeting's not that important. Let's just be clear, right?
Right. And so, yeah, it just be a human being, right? And part of that comes with, I mean, literally with life experience. Part of that does.
Mm-hmm.
I was, my 16-year-old daughter, I would love to have her do cold calls just to learn how to do it and just how to learn how to interact with people that you do not know. Mm-hmm. She doesn't want to do it, and that's fine. But 16, 19, even if you're a 25-year-old person, but you are emotionally immature, how are you going to handle that call?
Right.
I mean, just out of curiosity what's the word I'm thinking of? Just being a human and being respectful of the person on the other side of the phone. If you're going to respond in a way that is callous, you're not going to be able to do that with the life experience that you and I might have.
Yeah, and then you also say like the percentages are super low for a conversion on a relative way of thinking of it.
Phone call. Yeah,
from a phone call. So real quick, you do only phone calls, no emails, just because of the time constraint, really, and you've explained that in the to me in the past, but your specialty is phone calls, and the conversion rate for you to get a meeting for your client is about 20? Did I hear 20%?
Well,
40%?
It depends.
Okay,
it depends. So I would say on average for my clients, it's anywhere from 5 to 10% what I call a cold list. I've never ever spoken to that person before, and there's a certain variables. What industry you're calling into? What type of person title you're calling into? And are these people, for the most part, are they amenable to a conversation, to an interruption, and having a conversation? When I get up to the 20 to 25%, this is where you and I, I'll use the example I said before. I'm at a funeral right now.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll call you back.
Sure.
When I call that person back 3, 4, 5, 6 weeks from now, whatever it may be, I know when I introduce myself in that phone call, what I've typed in is that I say, hey, Brian, Rafe Juarez, On Demand Pipeline. We spoke on March 24th and you were at a funeral. It was a bad time. Did I catch you at a bad time again right now? And so that list is called this follow-up list that has this higher conversion rate because the fact that I'm stating that you and I spoke on March 24th.
So would you call that that funeral call would be in your stats if you're keeping them as such, would that be a non-conversion or not really? Because you still have that person.
They're still in the list.
So you haven't counted them yes or no. They're still
no, not yet. Got no. It. They're still on the list. And so they're in the follow-up list, and that's where has a much greater conversion, probably a 3 to 4x greater conversion than the original cold list.
Okay.
And so that's where you're going to get a lot of what I call gold, from that list as well. About 30 to 40% of the total number of meetings that I would get for a client on average will come from that list.
Right. And then it's your client's responsibility to get business or not from that person.
Yeah, because
a good
they're the
fit.
Experts. That's
yeah,
right.
They're the experts.
Yeah, they're the experts in their business and in their product.
I guess, from the start, I wasn't entirely clear saying that what you're trying to do is just help your client achieve a really warm, if not hot, business call. And you're not at all the expert. You know stuff about each company, but by no means would you even consider yourself an expert, right? At all.
That's right.
You're an expert in your field, but you're not an expert in any number of companies.
That's right. So products. I'll have enough information. That's right. I'll have enough information about that product or service, again, to have a meaningful business level conversation. Mm-hmm. And if they're asking me detailed questions that maybe myself and my client didn't discuss, mm-hmm. because it wasn't necessary. Mm-hmm. And I say, listen, that's deeper than my knowledge. And maybe recently started here. Yeah. This is why you got to talk to Joe. And then we'll book the time with Joe, and Joe will take it from there.
Right.
And Joe could be the CEO of the company. He could be the VP of sales. He could be some other role within my client's organization, but they'll take it from there. And that's where I exit out of that engagement with that particular prospect, because I booked the meeting. I'm moving on to the next prospect.
Yeah. And I guess what I wanted to talk to you about, kind of pivot from this whole sales stuff, is that, well, I originally got to know you through the Tom Woods School of Life, which I've talked about on this program before. And you gave how I'm relating a lot of this stuff. Not only have Rafe and I talked off, or I guess it's online, but off podcast, shall we say? But he had a webinar within the Tom Woods School that I often mention on this program, where he went through his whole philosophy, and not a training, but a kind of a starter pack of this of his whole business. And we all have our own origin story with Tom, but like, how did you get involved in his orbit, or get sucked into the Tom Woods cyclone, or however you want to talk about that?
Yeah, I had to think about that. I think you and I discussed this. Is I was going through my own faith journey.
Uh-huh.
I'm Catholic and have been raised Catholic, and never veered away from the faith, but at the same time, that did not necessarily live the faith out in my personal life. I have three girls. And as they were getting older, I thought they're going to start asking. And we sent them to Catholic school.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to start asking me questions about our faith.
Sure.
And if I don't have the answer, or if I say something that's not accurate according to the faith,
heretical.
That's right. The small chips, right? The chipping away mm-hmm. at a structure that ultimately leads to its collapse. And so I started studying my faith,
mm-hmm.
and I came across, I forget the name of the course, but anyway, I came across Tom Woods' book called How the Catholic Church Built Western Civilization. I think that's what it is.
Yeah, it is. I got it right behind me. Yeah,
that's right.
It sure is.
And he, along with EWTN, he created a mini series based on that book.
Yeah, I think it's called Catholic Church Builder of Civilization was the name of the
show.
That's
right.
Yeah.
That's right. And so that was my introduction to Tom Woods. And then I thought to myself, well, who is this Tom Woods? I got his book. I looked him up. I Googled him. He's like,
he's all that and more.
Yeah. So he's got a podcast. And I just started listening to that. So this was probably 2015, 16, maybe 2016, something like that. And I would listen to all the subjects that he had on there, most of the subjects. And then, of course, when the pandemic came and lockdowns came, we all know how Tom's mindset was on that. And I think a lot of people, you probably yourself and certainly myself, were questioning certain activities that governments were doing. And then, of course, being on the emailing list, I saw the Tom Woods School of Life.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, I was just talking to another guy who's in the group. He just joined the group recently.
Okay.
I was not part of the first group that joined. I was the second group.
Yeah.
And when I joined, I thought, okay, there seems to be something here. And it's been great since.
Yeah.
And we have these weekly accountability sessions with a small group led by David Moore. And we have about, 12 people in the group, and we've got a wide spectrum of people that are in there. Some are retired, some are
it's wild. Like anyone you pop into, I've been in probably three different ones. They encourage you to kind of go around, but like I think the benefit of it for me anyway is seeing the same people over and over, and never having the structure of going to our entrepreneurship meeting every week at the same time. But yeah, it's just
helping each other out.
It's helping each other out. And then like just stuff like, you know, natural things like, well, you know, I'm a podcaster, and Rafe wants to get his message out of not only cold calling, but promoting his own business. And we're okay with that. We're okay with that. All right.
That's right.
We want other people to succeed, right? As I say, a rising tide lifts all watercraft.
That's right.
So, yeah. And so we, like, one of my mission and purpose for this show in particular, with the folks from this Tom Woods School, is just to get their message out there, because a lot of folks, you know, let's be honest, like a lot of folks like you meet in life have never been on a podcast, or they don't. Some people never listen to podcasts, but they got something to say. And whether, you know, we're however big or small we are here, we're just another avenue to get your word out. And you articulate your journey and your mission quite well in what you're doing. And then you can in turn share that. And then that maybe gets exposure to this show, and then the next person down the line, they're better off. It's all beautiful the way the free market works.
The way the free market works. And within this group, we get to work with like-minded people and spend time with like-minded people.
Really remarkable people, a lot of them. Really remarkable. Yeah. And so I would encourage everybody, probably Rafe too, to join next time. And it's only open every 6 months, I want to say.
That's right.
And but just stay tuned. You can follow our emails or get on Rafe's list if you have one. Do you have one?
It's building.
All right.
So yeah, it's building. And that's one of the things that I will probably be learning from some of the guests that Tom has through School of Life and even outside of it. But the broader Tom Woods orbit is like a Stu McLaren type of subscription-based model. And that's something that I had thought about, but wasn't sure what I would be able to provide. And in fact, and just this morning, I was talking to my wife, three things came to mind. And so, okay, what would I do? How would I do it? Well, how would I price it? And for people in the Tom Woods School of Life, for instance, there'd be a founding membership, if you will, so at a lower price.
I went through Stu's training also, and I'm like, I had the same concerns as you. It's like, I don't really, he's very encouraging, right? He's very encouraging to start up. And that's what I encourage people to do, to whatever they want to do, is just start. But like, I'm brainstorming. I'm like, what am I going to offer a subscription? And then it's like, you know, the brain power required to like just come up with something that I don't really know about at that time. But I have that in the back of my mind that it is something I can do. But until it happens, I don't know what that would be. So I we go back to sales training. Some of it you can use a lot of it and a lot of the lessons. But even if you don't actually physically use that training in your day to day business or life, right?
You're going to use it in life, and no matter what, in everyday engagements.
All right. Anything else you want to plug? Website?
So we got the website ondemandpipe.com.
Okay.
ondemandpipe.com. And you can also, from there, my LinkedIn profile is on that website as well. You can go there and take a look at some of the clients that I have. And again, just focused on a couple pieces of business of how I can serve my clients. The primary is prospecting for my clients. The secondary is training and coaching. Okay. And I think the third, which is going to be this more membership subscription based model, again, still need to think through that, but it's worth, I think, for some people where they can't afford, or they don't want to spend the money on the monthly stipend, but they're going to find some value maybe joining a monthly group where, again, this was one of the thoughts I had this morning with my wife, is why not, I don't know, maybe once a month, every 2 weeks, a group of people come together and we're going to do role playing as a group. Maybe it's an hour long, and then we're going to focus on this particular portion of the sales funnel or conversation. And let's work through that. What does that sound like? And you can, we'll record it. We'll record it, and you can go back and listen to yourself. And also, now that everyone's using Zoom, it's a part of their business meetings.
It's a beauty. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's a pain, but like there's a real beauty behind like being able to access all the old stuff if you need to or want to. Archives. Yeah.
So what else? So I got that, the website, LinkedIn. I think from internally, School of Tom Wood School of Life, we have, I started two channels. Mm. One of them was at the request of our, from that webinar, sales awareness or prospecting webinar,
right,
was creating a sales meeting, a channel. And so we had our first meeting last week. We're going to do it every 2 weeks and anybody's welcome. And as an example, one of the gentlemen, he's going to be presenting, do a mock presentation of what he does on a daily basis with his clients.
Right.
And it's just to run through it with us. We can critique him and help him improve wherever he needs improvement. And we can do the same for everybody else as well, for wherever you feel that you need help. So that's one channel that I created. The second one is, and this is very personal, has nothing to do with sales, it's defending the faith. So again, Christian, Catholic, and I'm reading a lot about apologetics. But the challenge,
I'm interested. As long as it fits my time frame, I'm in on that one.
Yeah, we'll see. Because you're on the West Coast, we're about to figure that out. But as I read all these apologetics books and listen to a lot of podcasts about it, it's great. I'm filling my head with all this information, but I don't have these conversations with people. Part of it is because I feel a little uncomfortable, awkward. I mean, I'm not going to stand on a street corner and start doing that.
I mentioned something in one of my daily podcasts the other day about, you know, reading the letters of St. Patrick and biographies of St. Patrick. And I said, I'm not here to proselytize, like be the guy on the street corner with a, you know, placard and telling you to repent or you'll go to hell. Like, yeah, I might believe that, but I mean, there's a certain amount of social decorum involved here too. But, you know, so I get it, like what you're saying about that, you know, that there's, I don't mind at all. I think we're called to evangelize. It's the, I think the proselytization has a negative connotation because of like the placard holding and whatever. So, I mean, there's that fine line of how to approach this, right? And I think what you're doing is you're advocating for an open forum here to share ideas.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's right. Share ideas. And we'll go through a particular course to use that. It's because it's actually called Defending the Faith and Public Speaking, where you can engage with other people and know how to engage with them and what to engage them with. Mm-hmm. Again, having the knowledge, having some sort of structure, and then, of course, bring in the empathy and the humanness into that conversation, because it can get messy when you're talking about someone who may have been hurt by the church.
They
have been abused by a priest, right?
Yeah.
And they threw the whole faith out with that. And so you don't start off a conversation with an intellectual debate of why God exists.
That's not where they're coming from. That's not where they're coming from. And you mentioned earlier, I don't know if you still have a little bit of time.
I do.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned earlier, like you're growing up, and I feel like we're pretty similar in this regard. Growing up Catholic, and you know you know a lot of the stuff, but then you realize at some point later in your life, you're like, man, like I'm not at all what I thought I was, and there's way more to this than what you were essentially told at school or at CCD or something like that. And that the faith is so much larger and really, I believe, so much more important than it's given credit to in the public sphere. And people, like you're saying, like, well, you got to meet people where they're at, because some people have a real problem with, you know, whatever it was, just going to Catholic school and having the nuns whack you on the, you know, the hand, or to the point of like the vicious abuse that happened by the hands of several of these priests that we're hearing about, you know, sometimes decades later. So you know, I understand the objections. I don't necessarily agree with the tactic that you should dismiss, is I guess my point, because this is, I believe, the ultimate truth, and not necessarily like where we're going with this podcast, but you know, we're aligned here similarly. And you know, I'm not into proselytization, but I am into evangelization. So, you know, if you can learn more about this stuff, do it. You know, you might not agree. Right. You might not agree, but at least engage on the intellectual level as opposed to the emotional level, I guess, is ultimately my point.
Yeah. And I see this for my learning for two reasons. Mm-hmm. It helps me better understand my faith. And then number two, it's more about when these conversations, when they come up or if they may come up, it's more about my close family and a few close friends.
Sure.
Where these conversations might come up. And every once in a while, I go to the coffee shop, and that's where I'm going to work, you know, every morning before I come back home and do phone calls. You know, every once in a while, the conversation may come up just by happenstance, just by accident in the way that I'm talking to someone or someone's talking to me. And so I can be prepared for that conversation and just give somebody some level of hope, if you will.
Yeah. And I come from the point where, like, I wouldn't say I have a lot of friends who are dyed-in-the-wool atheists, but they're essentially most people around here are, where I grew up, even in going to school, Catholic schools for 8 years, like, they're essentially secular folks, and they have this, a lot of people in my family too, I mean, they have this visceral reaction against anything religious, whether they're, you know, quote-unquote spiritual or not. If you're a dyed-in-the-wool atheist and you want nothing to do with it, fine. Like, we can talk about, you know, how the Spartans did in the tournament. That's fine with me. But
that's not.
Not fine with you after last night, huh? But, you know, because I'm not going to try to convince, because you're not going to convince me of the other guy's not going to convince me of atheism. So it's pointless. We don't even agree on first principles. So it's not worth going into that debate or argument unless it's like on a Oxford debate format and see who wins. I mean, that's kind of corny. It's not going to help people in their regular lives, I guess.
This is more about, it's to build on that. This is more about having conversations with people who are open to it and who have thought about it and are searching for truth.
Right.
And that's where I can do my part, is be able to provide, I don't know, open the door a little bit, open the window, and just like with one little conversation about whatever it may be. And who knows, that person may stick it in the back of their mind and not think about it for years. Who knows? Mm-hmm. And it may be fruitful at a later time.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's about the journey, I guess, ultimately. Yeah. But it's great conversation. I didn't particularly plan on going down that road, but I'm happy we did. So anything, like, to wrap up, one more, I'll give you the final word, Rafe, if you got anything else to say to the folks or not.
Yeah, I would just say, if you need help with sales, whether you're a founder of a small company or you're the VP of sales of a company, and again, it's mostly smaller ones because they haven't built out their sales process and their sales team yet. If you need help with top of funnel and you're B2B and you need to bring somebody in from the outside, I can help you with that. Or if you have some people that are on staff, but they need some training and some coaching just to get over some challenges that they may have, some head trash that they may have, or not sure how to have phone calls, or even further down the funnel, we can work on, we can do some training and coaching on that as well. But I'm here to help.
Okay.
And that's it.
Awesome. All right. We'll have all the links in the show notes and how to get in touch with Rafe and some of his other stuff. And it's been great having you, Rafe. And go to briandeolery.com for more, and we'll see you next time. Thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Brian.
Thanks again for taking your time to listen to the O'Leary Review podcast. And for more resources and links to all my stuff, briandeolery.com is where you'll find me. We have links for our Substack page and more. Again, that's briandeolery.com.